It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at NeverwinterNightsPodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
This is A. Rowan, a.k.a. DM Silver Adept of Neverwinter Nights Podcast in the Realms of Trinity.
And this is Jared, a.k.a. Than. I'm the creator and administrator of the Thay Persistent World.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian of the Neverwinter Nights Podcast. And you're listening to the 197th episode of the Neverwinter Nights Podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games and the MMO from Cryptic. Neverwinter. Well, today we're going to cut the news short, news segment out a little bit short here because we have a very good interview with Thayan, creator of Thay, Realm of the Red Wizards. It's a Neverwinter Nights 1 persistent world that's been up for a long time, almost 10 years, and you know, Thayan has had other persistent worlds that have ran even longer than that, stretching all the way back to 2004. So, you know, everybody stay tuned for that. It's a great interview. And next episode, episode 198, we will be talking about the final plans for the Gen Con appearances in episode 199 and 200. So be staying tuned for those. We'll be recording the next episode very shortly. So enjoy the interview.
So just to get started, can you share with everybody a little bit about yourself and how you started getting into development for Neverwinter Nights?
Sure. I started development of, well, really, I got into Neverwinter Nights the year that it was released. I was eagerly anticipating way back in 2002 when I was still a kid, so to speak. I went through the original campaigns, and I've actually only ever played it one time. And then I delved into the world, persistent worlds, and really kind of got into the whole multiplayer aspect. I had never done anything like that before, so it was very unique and cool. I started out, I don't know if anyone remembers some of the very old hardcore worlds of Daggerford and then its successor, Haze. I kind of played on those to begin with, and the experiences that I had from that really kind of rubbed off onto the development when I actually got into developing my own worlds, because I really enjoyed the hardcore hunger, thirst, fatigue. You know, when you die, that's it. You don't get to come back, you know, a million times and so on. Throughout the years, I've mellowed a little bit, and for the sake of the player base as well, and people that don't have that same hardcore attitude, which is, I'd say, the majority of Neverwinter Nights crew that I am at least involved. I've kind of mellowed on that for our persistent world, but it's just, you know, one of those things that I kind of look back fondly on when I first started Neverwinter Nights. So I played Daggerford and Haze for a few years, and then it was, I actually remember the month, not the day, but it was February of 2004 when I first cracked open the tool set and decided, hey, I'm going to create my own persistent world. I want to make a place to play in exactly how I want it. And so I started dabbling in the tool set and the Neverwinter Vault, which sadly, you know, as everyone knows, has kind of gone away now. But yep, that was really key for me, because I would go out there and I would pull down scripts and I would open up other people's work and see how they did it. I had absolutely no coding background, no scripting background whatsoever. And so having that community, being able to go out there and see what other people had done and play around with it and break stuff and try to fix it, and then you know, eventually kind of getting into the point where I could expand on another person's work is something that I just love about Neverwinter Nights. It's amazing that, you know, after all this time, to me, I can still make something which I feel is fresh. And I also feel some of the other people that join the Persistent World think it's fresh as well, just because of the tool set and the ability that we have, you know, just sharing that information through the sources that we have now and then especially in the past too.
Yeah, definitely keeping it fresh has been the, I think, the secret of the longevity of the product.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I'm sure, EA now, they're looking back like, geez, they just made this way too well. We're not making any more money off these guys. What else can we do to pull the plug and get them to buy new games from us? But
yeah,
so far it has legs, and I think it's going to keep going for a while.
Oh, definitely. Talked about how you got started in all the thousands of hours since that day, fateful day in February of 2004. That was the most costly double click you ever had.
That is for sure. I've always said I'm sure many developers wish they'd say this too, but if I had kept track of all the hours that I have spent in the tool set or developing for this game, I would say I'm in the tens of thousands. I mean, like 20,000-30,000 or more. I mean, it's been, the 12 years now, really, and well, I guess 10 years for myself in development, that I've been pointing to the tool set. And granted, the original persistent world, which I created, has gone away. I don't know if anyone ever played there. It was a persistent world called Shannara, based on the Terry Brooks novels. So I really enjoyed those books about a post-apocalyptic world, thousands of years in the future, where everything, the human race was almost wiped out, and there's elves and trolls and all that. And so I kind of built in that world to begin with, and I learned a lot from that, and it helped me, as we moved into the additional persistent worlds that I started, and now in Thay here, which I've told people I consider my masterpiece, one that I am extremely proud of, and I will forever be grateful for the opportunities I've had here to build and have others experience the vision that I've been able to build using Neverwinter Nights.
What you've done has been outstanding, just from looking over it and everything, and getting into that. Can you give us a little overview of your persistent world, Thay, Realm of the Red Wizards?
Sure. So Thay is a persistent world which is based in a land ruled by evil wizards. These evil wizards have formed a loose government, or kind of formed a coalition among themselves. They call themselves the Red Wizards. And this is something that should be intimately familiar to anyone that is, adventured in and worked, has had their characters in the Forgotten Realms, whether it's on pen and paper, not even Neverwinter Nights, whether you're kind of a source book junkie like I am, and you just read through the information on them, and then of course the novels on Thay as well. There's many Forgotten Realms novels which are either set in Thay or have Red Wizards of Thay, these evil wizards meddling in the affairs of other countries. So ever since I really got into Forgotten Realms, Thay has always been for me this evil country that everyone's scared of even talking about for fear that these Red Wizards will hear or use their magic and find out and come after you or do something even worse to make you pay for not respecting them as you should. So with the persistent world of Thay, what I have really tried to do, and one of the things that has been my primary guiding value throughout the entire creation of Thay, is try to keep it as true to the source material the official source material that's been presented as possible. And as any source book junkie knows as well, that can be a little difficult at times, because you have one source book which says one thing and then another source book which says the exact opposite. So while it's sometimes a juggling match to try and reconcile some opposing source material, it is something that I've really used for the vast majority of the persistent world, so that if someone who is familiar with Thay outside of the persistent world, if they log into Thay, they're going to hopefully immediately feel like, yes, I am in Thay. If I go to the largest city of Thay called Byzantar, and I go there and I can actually look at the source book map, and I can make my way around town. Here's where this temple should be. Here's where the central evil citadel should be, where the Tharkion and the Zulkar rules from. And so it's something that, again, it really kind of brings home to the players of Neverwinter Nights. It kind of gives them a more tangible, visual feel of Thay rather than reading through the source books and relying on your imagination. Should I go into some more details on aspects?
Definitely. Yeah, I'll just let you run it now.
Sure. Okay, cool. Well, so some of the main components of Thay, which I feel really give it kind of a unique aspect, and not to say other persistent worlds don't have this, but some of the things that I've really tried to stress and focus on, you know, with the builders that have been helping me out, and then, of course, you know, as I've been building for the persistent world myself, is just some of the main components of it, such as we've really tried to make the persistent world as self-sufficient as possible. Throughout the course of the persistent world's lifetime, the clock continually ticks. It runs at a quarter of a time, or a quarter of the amount of real time. So 15 minutes in game is one real time hour. It's considered, you know, 1 hour within the game world. And so throughout that time, we actually have it scripted within the world that things are going to happen automatically throughout that time. And one of the favorite parts, and we actually ended up doing this twice because I love it so much, is we had the entire time of troubles occur within the Thay persistent world, where, you know, the gods fell from the heavens, they made mortal, and magic just went all shit. And so, you know, that people in game, when they tried to cast, there'd be wild magic, or when they would go to a priest, any priest in game, that priest would tell them, God so and so has seen fit to test us in this time of troubles, or, you know, so on, trying to give them the spiel in quotes about how, you know, what they're testing the faith, you know, and trying to put a good spin on it. And then we had DM led events throughout this entire thing, and some of the really cool parts of that also are that, you know, there were actually a couple gods, or a god that walked within the realm of Thay at the time. The god Hor, despite the name, H-O-A-R, actually came to Thay during the time of troubles. So, and, you know, he's one of my favorite gods, actually, the god of revenge and vengeance. So that's one thing that I just love doing, is having him come in and get involved with the players. And, you know, throughout this whole time that the clock is ticking, we tried to stay as close as we could to the source material for when certain things were happening in the time of troubles within, you know, the Avatar trilogy novels. They were, you know, something was kind of going on in game. You know, we were giving, you know, the players kind of rumors and you know, hints at, oh yeah, there was a huge battle in Tantris between Bane and Torm and so on, and things like that, to give everyone the feel within the game that, hey, you know, we've really got a story going within Thay. It's not just this static persistent world where you log in and, you know, the same time, you know, it's the same time, it's, you know, as it was when you logged in 2 months ago. That clock is always running within the world, and it's always set up too so that you do not need a DM to just kind of do your daily activities. We have everything set up dynamically. You know, if you go into an adventure area, a labyrinth, a crypt, a tomb, just, you know, abandoned caves, mines, wherever it might be, we have our encounter system, which is based on NESS. We have the encounter system and the treasure system set up to randomly and dynamically spawn different creatures based on the level of the individuals that are heading into the area. So I know some people, you know, don't necessarily like that areas always scale to their level. And we do have some areas that have a minimum or a maximum level as well. But in general, just to make the world a little more playable, to let, you know, characters of any level go in and check out all the different adventure areas, of which we have over 80 now. We do scale most of the adventures, or most of the adventure areas, dynamically for the encounters and the treasures. And then another thing that we do as well, which I'm kind of proud of, is the overland area travel system is something that was developed specifically for Thay. And I know I've seen several systems that were on the Vault, and the seamless transition system that was on the Vault as well is somewhat similar to that. But one of the unique things we have with our travel in Thay is that we don't have every single square of Thay actually created. What happens is when you leave a static area or a set area like the main starting city of Tyraturos, and you start heading west along the road to Amrathar. When you leave the city, you end up in a road area. And when you do that, the road area is dynamically populated with the appropriate placeables, you know, the decorations for that type of terrain. So there might be wagon wheels there. There'll be maybe bandits, especially if you head out at night. You know, and there'll be different things to kind of give you the feel that, okay, hey, you know, we've traveled a little bit. You know, after basically we call these leagues. You go one league from Tyraturos, and the road, you know, all of a sudden you end up on at a part of the road where something of interest is there. You know, whether it's bandits, or just something that would have stopped you, you know, from traveling another league. So basically, it does take a little bit of time to get from one location to the next, but you're always kind of getting a dynamically generated, unique area. So you hit the road one league west of Tyraturos, or I'm sorry, if you're heading west, you're actually... Yeah, that's right. You are going to Amrathar, that I guess. So if you head west from Tyraturos, you're one league, then you end up in a road area. If you head west again, another league, you'll end up on another road area. And then if you maybe head south or east, or south or north, you're going to get off the road and you end up in a plains area. And so it's the entire map of Thay is actually available on our website, and it's something that I do encourage, you know, people to download. But there are also things in games. We have maps in game which people can use to actually tell where they're at in the world of Thay. So it's I always try to do multiple ways to for most of the main systems that we have of actually learning and using them. And the Overland system is one of the big realism draws that I feel we have for the Thay world, because you're not just always going to the exact same area in what is essentially a very large kingdom. It's, I forget, I think around 300 to 500 miles across, and almost double that the other way. So it's a very large place. For me, even with the amount of time that I've sunk into, you know, Neverwinter Nights, it would just be impossible, even with, you know, all the contributors we've had, to create every square inch of Thay. So that's something that I feel is a big benefit to our world.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So out of curiosity, sorry to cut you off there bit, but the one thing you mentioned sort of struck a chord with me is you're talking about how, you know, as you go through, there's maps and there's opportunities to feel fully immersed. So would you say that it's a role-play server, or would you classify it as something else?
Thay is definitely a role-play server. It's something that, again, going back to my very first days of multiplayer, it's something that I really feel, you know, at this point in Neverwinter Nights Age 2 is kind of more important. Again, this is just my opinion, but I feel it's, you know, having that role-play aspect and really trying to impress others to do the same when they come to the world gives it more meaning, gives it more of a feel than just the hack and slash place where, you know, you run around, you're everything's LOL, you know, and oh, we got, you know, ad loot, stuff like that. Thay is definitely a role-play oriented world. We do, however, you know, it's always been advertised a place where we do allow all styles of play. So, you know, even if you don't feel like role-playing, you're certainly welcome in Thay. It's just that, you know, if others are role-playing, we would just ask that, you know, that's kind of our focus. And if you do want to come to Thay and not role-play, totally fine. But please, you know, just kind of leave those people alone and requests, or, you know, do whatever it is that you like to do, otherwise itself, or, you know, keeping a party that, you know, does their own hack and slash style of play and so on. Nice. And then really to enforce kind of the whole role play aspect of the server as well, there is one feature that, again, it was developed specifically for Thay, but I know many other persistent worlds have this, modules have this as well. It's kind of a reputation system. We call it the notoriety system. You know, how notorious are you? How evil or how powerful or how cunning are you? And how well known to the general population of Thay and then other adventurers are you known as well? And so to kind of really encourage role play, this notoriety system is based on the fact that you can give other people roleplay experience rewards. Any player can do this. It's all governed by the system, so you don't have to worry about, you know, giving too much or giving too often. It will all manage that for you. You know, you just try to give them roleplay, and if you can't or if it's too soon, it will tell you try again in a little bit. But with the entire notoriety system, like when you're giving roleplay rewards, you're not just giving the player experience, but you're also giving them notoriety as well. Or if you aren't playing with another person and you're just running quests, you're also getting notoriety by performing quests, which our quest system is unlimited. You can talk to any NPC, and if they like you and you can convince them to, they'll give you a quest. You know, fetch me this or deliver this message, or this is they. You need to go and assassinate this person. there's even a few Thayans that are sympathetic to slaves. So we also have a free the slave quest, you know, that you lead the slave to freedom and so on. So we have a wide variety of quests depending on your alignment, on, you know, your charisma, your intelligence, you know, all of that will play a part in determining what quest someone gives you, you know, if you even get a quest and so on. But all the while you're accumulating notoriety, so you can become notorious without necessarily even interacting with other people. Although really, interacting with others, getting the role play experience is the best way. You get the largest notoriety rewards for doing those, getting the role play experience rewards from DMs or players. So I guess roundabout way, the role play aspect of the server, that is our focus, or that is our category. But again, others are certainly welcome to check us out. And we'd also encourage anyone who hasn't role played before to check us out, and we'll if you're interested, we do have a very inviting player base that certainly be willing to kind of show you the ropes and help you along.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Awesome. That sounds awesome. I know we talked a little bit before about how long you've been up, but what's your player base looking like lately? Is it, have you noticed any trends up, down?
So recently, the player base has been down. It's not been as strong as it once was. We actually had really strong numbers of players back in the November to, about February timeframe or so. For our Persistent World, we hit our maximum number. The server is relatively small, so we only allow 30 on at a time, but we were getting up to 30 there for a little while. At least, nowadays it just really depends. If we have a player or a DM run event, which we do have a DM campaign, being run now, or actually a couple campaigns being run now, and I really try to encourage our DMs to post their event times, because it seems like that kind of helps, people make plans or get on the server. We can get up to around double digit numbers, but Thay throughout its entire life has been kind of a relatively smaller server. We've never had the popularity of some of the bigger servers. For us, on a good day, we'll probably get up into the mid teens or so, and, fluctuate anywhere from zero to up to the mid teens, just depending on the time of the day of the week, and so on.
Yeah.
I'm hoping as the weather gets worse and people have to stay inside, we'll get more people back on. So.
Sure. That's not bad. I mean, considering the fact that, the length of how long Neverwinter Nights 1 has been out, and number two, how many servers there are to pick from.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
your
very
volume.
True.
Yeah, you're spread out over a lot more servers than there are in Neverwinter Nights 2. So, I could definitely see that being, it's still a very big accomplishment nonetheless.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. We've been up for, let's see here. I always get the number actually kind of messed up here, but we went into beta. It would have been 2006 is when we started our beta, and then we went live in January of 2007. So we've been up for quite a while, and the numbers, throughout the years have just really fluctuated, up in the upper 20s for a long time, and then it'll just drop down to 10 single digits and so on for a while too. So it just seems to kind of ebb and flow. For me, the key is, I don't really look at the numbers so much. I just, Bay is my labor of love. It's just something that I enjoy, that vision with me as well. I've always told people, and I still say as well, that even if I were the only one that played Bay, I would still be building it and creating, because I want to see this world come to life. I want to see all of Thay, and we are very close to having everything completed, so that every location in the Thayan map, as far as official source material, will actually be available soon. No problem.
After all this time, because you did mention it has been quite a while since you started, what still interests you and keeps you eager to keep developing after all this time?
Well, what keeps me interested is, and I alluded to before, but what keeps me interested in Neverwinter Nights development right now is that I can bring my imagination to life, and that's probably something that you guys have had the answer been given to that multiple times. But
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's just the tool set is, even though the graphics aren't as flashy as all the new games out there, I mean, we've got hacks out there, and for the longest time I resisted hacks, but that's a whole other story. But you know, we've got all kinds of custom content out there that improves the look of Neverwinter Nights, and we've got such power in the tool set, and with the custom, you know, the ability to create custom content and use custom content. And I mean, you look at the BioWare forums, and the custom content forum is just, it's always blowing up. There's always something new, and people are always working on improving or providing brand new stuff for Neverwinter Nights. And so for me, you know, not only is it just being able to bring my imagination to life, but it's also that, you know, others are involved in Neverwinter Nights too, that they're not giving up on it, that they're building new stuff for it. And yeah, again, I sometimes do have my tunnel vision where I want to do what I want to do, but yeah. being able to, you know, to step out of that once in a while and see, hey, other people are doing this and this, and oh, that's pretty cool too, I'm going to take a look at that a little bit more, is something that, you know, it's really kind of a driving aspect for me. And honestly, I don't see myself quitting Neverwinter Nights anytime soon. I'll look over my shoulder and make sure my wife isn't looking, because she would not like that answer, but. Hey, I put her in the game. She should appreciate that. You know, she's apparently, she is the most beautiful woman in Thay, and everyone who goes there can actually get a quest from her. Her name is Heidi, and she'll give you this beautiful amulet. She'll give you a very nice amulet that is actually a dynamic amulet. Gives you additional powers as you level up and things like that. So she has a very nice quest developed. You know, she should be happy, but for some reason, it just wasn't enough for her. So.
I'm still waiting to hear a thunk.
Yeah, I was looking around. I was worried about hearing it myself, man. Come flying.
I closed the door to the room, and I told her that I'm doing an interview and no interruptions. But normally when it's something Neverwinter Night, she still interrupts me anyway. But so far, I don't know. Yeah, she must not be listening at the door, at least. So wipe off my brow and just say next question, please.
Yeah, open the URL for the episode.
Right.
Well, you know, we're having a memorable time here. Speaking of memorable times, what have been some of your most memorable times over the years that, you know, that you've been live? Things that come to stand out to you?
Oh, wow. Boy, you know, I thinking about this one here, this, you know, after 10 years, well, I guess 12 years, if you consider the game or the years that I spent as a player, this is a tough one for me. But I would say some of the most memorable moments that I've had have been at the end of the very first Persistent World that I did, when I decided that, you know, Shannara just wasn't for me. I'm going to move on to something else. You know, we didn't have a very large player base in that Persistent World either, but one of the things I really enjoyed was we did an entire kind of day-long event, and I mean, it was a marathon event, of this evil taking over the world. And it was kind of all the bad things that happened in the books were happening in the world all at one time. And so, you know, we had these events where all these certain cities and castles were falling to the evil, you know, the evil that was consuming the world. And finally at the end, the heroes, you know, they sacrificed themselves in the waters of the Hadeshorn, this undead lake kind of place. And they ended up surviving and making it to another world. And because of that, I actually have some elements, some relics that we have in Thay, which are kind of a dedication to these people that were in the original Shannara world. So that was, you know, that was probably my very first memorable moment that I had. But I guess of all, or probably the cream of the crop, the top moment that I have was earlier, well, it'd be last year. It was in late 2012, the beginning of 2013. The thing, you know, for the Thay Persistent world, it had started in the year 1357 DR, and we were up to, it was about the year 1372 or so. But one of the things I've never been a big fan of is the fourth edition rules, where it just kind of blew all of Forgotten Realms to pieces, where they just changed everything. And it's something that I didn't really want to see, you know, they get into it, because like I've said, I've always been a big source material fan. But I tell you guys, once I get to fourth edition, I'm done. I love second edition. I love, you know, third edition, but fourth edition for me is
disaster.
It's just not. Yeah.
It sounds faster.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's actually funny you mentioned that, because when we went to Gen Con last year, they came out with the Sundering and they started talking all that stuff. And the first thing we thought was, even they are now admitting fourth edition sucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go figure. So yeah, knowing, I don't know if you guys know what actually happens to Thay, or the listeners here do either, but basically in the fourth edition rules, the Red Wizards of Thay essentially get defeated by one of their own, and Thay just turns into this undead wasteland. And while it was kind of intriguing to me, it's not, I mean, because it would take just a huge amount of design effort and scripting effort to actually make that happen, plus the fact that over half the gods are dead, and it would just be a major design overhaul for the persistent world to continue on following source material. I worked with our DMs and with our player base to basically do what we call the setting reboot, where at the end of 2012, beginning of 2013, we started an entire process of destroying Thay, kind of following the fourth edition rules. You know what happened? I do actually love the Haunted Land trilogy. It's a trilogy about Thay. If you guys get a chance to read those books, I would highly recommend them. It kind of really goes into a lot of what the leadership of Thay, this group of eight red wizards that are called Zulkers, how they just fight amongst themselves. I mean, if they would be able to actually get together and you know, work together, they would be able to take over half the world. But they're so petty, they're so evil, they're so set on their right, they're going to be the ruler, you know, they are better than all their peers, that there is just continually fighting in Thay. It's kind of this land of controlled chaos. So what happens in these books is that these Zulkers end up ripping themselves apart and basically all of Thay apart as well. And then, of course, that nasty spell plague hits, and that just it destroys everything. So to kind of wrap up the setting, and what I wanted to do with this setting reboot is destroy Thay, similar to what I did with the Shannara, only on a much grander scale, you know, over the course of months and many, many events. And we would destroy Thay as it is, and then essentially, as part of that storyline, we would actually go back and reboot the setting, and we would start in the beginning of, or well, kind of in the middle of the second edition rules. We started back in 1356 DR, right before some big wars in Thay, and of course the Time of Troubles, which is I love. That's my favorite period of the Forgotten Realms history. So I got to do that twice, when we originally did the Open Thay, and then not too long ago when we just encountered the Time of Troubles again after the setting reboot. So, you know, that most memorable moment for me was all of those different events that led up to the setting reboot, because it just involved so many different players, so many DMs. I mean, we had, I'd say, some of the best turnouts for events. And throughout the entire history of the persistent world, there's always been this kind of hidden force. When you first log into Thay, you all of a sudden you'll be kind of shocked at what happens if you've never done it before. When you log in, there's something that immediately catches your attention. That was something that I wanted to do right from the get-go, and it's always been that way, because kind of like a good movie or like a good book, I wanted it to draw the person in, you know, give them a reason, like, what the hell's just happening? I'm going to be enslaved? What is this place? And then all of a sudden, you know, something happens where it doesn't quite occur that way, but yet you're still drawn to Thay, and you just begin your adventures. Well, the reason that you were saved, eventually we revealed that reason at the very end of the setting reboot, and it had been built up throughout that entire time. I mean, like I was saying, Thea is not just this static, persistent world. There's a story that's continually being told by the DMs, and it really worked out slick that we were able to kind of link many of these main campaigns that had been run throughout the course of Thea's last 5 years together in this series of about, I think it was about a 4 month period where we kind of ran this final campaign where we drew from elements of the previous campaigns before it. And then at the end, there was this enormous battle where the heroes all saved or sacrificed themselves, again, drawing back to that Shannara experience. They all sacrificed themselves to stop this evil Zulker Demi-Lich from destroying the world, kind of like they did in the Haunted Land trilogy. And then at the end, the Overgod Ale survives, and he lets the spirits of the departed know that they will be remade, and it all fades to black, and then we started the new reboot. So that was definitely my most memorable moment, but it's more of a series of events than just one particular, you know, moment in time, I guess.
Oh, that's cool. And I think Brian would agree too. That's something that we saw is, you know, there's always the single events that you always joke about, but it was the stream or the string of them that really sort of sticks with you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's one thing. I was enjoying it so much. I was actually kind of writing up public recaps. I don't know if you guys want the link or anything like that, but I actually have a recap of the entire thing. It's about, I think, 4 pages long.
Yeah, definitely.
And then at the very end, there's a recap of my events. So. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, that's so. On a little bit of a different tack, obviously you've seen how, you know, you've run your server for quite some time. What do you think for the Neverwinter Nights community? Do you see it making a comeback? Do you see it gaining steam? Or do you think it's just going to sort of continually, as people drop out or new games come out, it's just going to weaken over time?
Well, yeah, I would love to say that it's going to make a comeback, but I think there's too much distraction in the world nowadays where there's always something newer and shinier that's coming out, and people need to try it. And I've definitely seen throughout my time here, and it's kind of that whole perseverance piece of people get upset or people leave for whatever reason or other, but then they do come back. And so that at least to me is hopeful in the fact that even though, you know, we may be losing some people or it seems like the numbers are maybe getting a little less than they were in the past, I think if there's something that could be done to kind of catch the attention of people that have maybe left or that are taking a break or whatever it might be, we could see a revival of Neverwinter Nights as well. One of the things that I'm just a lowly persistent world creator. I'm definitely not an actual game developer or an advertiser or, you know, game producer by any means. But, you know, I see all these Kickstarter campaigns. You know, Kickstarter for this game or Kickstarter for this movie even, you know, just all kinds of you know, different topics or different areas that people are willing to donate money.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it would be really cool if somehow, some way we'd be able to cut through the red tape or, you know, we'd be able to, EA would give approval or, you know, Hasbro or whoever owns, you know, D&D now would give approval to allow someone to, you know, either use the Aurora tool set or use the Neverwinter Nights engine or somehow essentially give it an overhaul or if nothing else, just use the Neverwinter Nights name, but allow them to create a game that can actually use elements from the current Neverwinter Nights, you know, so that we could essentially port what we've created into this new shiny Kickstarter campaign created world or a game that we have. And then within that game, we can use all the new fancy features that are available with, you know, the you know, newer computers, newer processors, all that fun stuff that we have, you know, 12 years from when it would really come out.
Definitely, that would definitely be something that would be awesome. You know, unfortunately, yeah, as you'd mentioned, Wizards of the Coast owns the rights. Well, Hasbro is the parent company, but Wizards of the Coast is the the string puller here.
Okay.
And we had talked to Fergus Urquhart and Josh Sawyer a couple years ago. We talked to them when they just kicked off their Kickstarter for their new game, that Project Eternity. Now it's called Pillars of Eternity is the actual product name. That's the reason why they pretty much did that, because they had to do their own thing. Because even though they made Neverwinter Nights 2 and one for that matter as part of BioWare, they couldn't get the rights back to it. Once Atari lost the rights, that was the end of it. And now Perfect World Entertainment has been given free reign with Neverwinter. So they're very. It's almost like the George Lucas thing. If you think about Star Wars, before they were bought by Disney. So, unless Wizards of the Coast would be bought out by an actual game company that was, wanting to provide content to people versus, only licensing it to one person.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
You see what I'm saying? It's really a shame because what made the game is being shut out right now, in my humble opinion, is to the point where, people like you and I and everybody else that's been working in the Aurora Electron tool set for the last 10 years, it really put out high quality stuff. You're not able to tap into or add to what has already been done. I mean, sure, you can write whatever you want and this, that, and the other, but you really can't take it anywhere as far as changing the platform because you're locked in. You don't have the rights to change the source code, even if you had it, and you don't have rights to publish anything. So without having express, publisher access, to the source material. So it's one of them situations that it'd be great, but unless they get bought, Wizards of the Coast gets bought out or sold off from Hasbro, it ain't gonna happen.
Jeez.
They've been highly commercial, let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, it certainly seems that way. Like, well, if it's not making us any money, we're gonna not do anything. And well, it almost seems like they're actively trying to stamp it out or say stamp out interest in it.
Well, certainly, and we've had this conversation before. I mean, honestly, it didn't have to be that way. You could still made your money. You just would have had to change your model a little. Mm-hmm. You'd say, hey, look, we got this. Hold on 1 second.
Sure. It's pretty cool that you guys have, actually talked to some of the game designers then. I imagine having done 100 of these or whatnot, you have some pretty good connections then, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. There would definitely be ways to, had monetized it to the point where you could give people the rights to build in their tool set. But like say, for instance, like you have currently, you have a lot of open-end game engines that you either pay for the software, to use it, or you can pay for them by the month or something. They could have had something like that. So, hey, you want to build a game? Here you go. You could build a game. But, this is what it's going to cost you to use this tool set. And yes, you can monetize your products, but we get a cut. like a Fox's Pizza franchise or a Domino's franchise fee. You pay a franchising fee. So then in turn you could have some kind of a setup where you run your own MMO, like a mini MMO yourself that you're encouraged to work on and actually even hire people to build more. So you'd have so much revenue generation just from that alone. Just look how long the game's been out, for God's sakes.
It
would have been a paycheck that kept on paying. Right now, they're only getting small royalties when a game copy sells on GOG or Steam or something like that. So that's a drop in the ball.
And that's very unfortunate because it puts us who still love the game in a difficult position of, how many more years till we're the only ones that are playing?
And talking to all the different games and come new games, I mean, have you checked out the new Neverwinter MMO?
I have not, actually. I've just been so involved with, Thay and Neverwinter Nights 1. I honestly have not. I guess when Neverwinter Nights 2 came out, I was really hoping to get involved with that, and that's actually how Thay started as the Neverwinter Nights 2 concept. I had the server up for more than a couple times just for testing purposes, but at the point when I was involved kind of at the very beginning, it was very difficult for me to envision being able to complete Thay or do with Thay what I wanted in Neverwinter Nights 2, so I ended up moving back to the Neverwinter Nights 1. platform, or, you know, the Aurora tool set to complete it.
Before we wrap up, any final thoughts you want to share with the people listening?
Well, you know, I just encourage everyone that's, you know, kind of interested in adventuring in an evil land. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to be evil or your character has to be evil, but, you know, if you are interested in adventuring with some place where there's orcs that just walk around town like it's no big deal, and goblins that are in the military, and you know, they tell you to move along and so on, please come and check out Thay. I think you won't be disappointed. Spend a couple hours there, see what you think.
Awesome. You know, we want to thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been an excellent interview.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was definitely very, very good to hear from someone who's really thought out and been in the community as such long as yourself. And, you know, feel free to give us any updates and, you know, whatever you'd like to. If you have anything new that comes out or something that you'd like us to showcase on the podcast, we'd be more than happy to post that for you or have you back on the show.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, yeah, I appreciate that. And yeah, thanks for reaching out to me, Brian. I'll definitely be keeping a much closer eye on the podcast now, too. I've been looking at the site, and that I know I've come out here before, but I've not actually listened to any of them. But you guys have a pretty amazing collection out here, so I will poking through some of this here.
Oh, yeah. So I will appreciate that, and, you know, and we'll be looking forward to hearing from you. And stay tuned for our two live appearance episodes coming up in episode 199 and 200, too. So we'll be out at Gen Con, and that'll be a lot of fun. So
cool. Sounds like it. All right.
All right. Well, yeah. Thanks again, and we'll be talking to you soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Until next time, get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity. We're solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.